the definition of, or the perceived definition of justice has changed over the past several years. When most of us, we think of justice, what do we think of? We think it from usually from a legal point of view. We think that justice should mean that all people are equal under the law. That's what we think about. However, today we are told we must view justice from a different philosophy. It's called distributive justice. Quite different from what you would call social justice. Now, again, these definitions are from I Googled them. Social justice is defined as everyone is treated equal. That is, everyone should have equal rights, should have equal opportunities, and equal treatment no matter who you are. Distributive justice, on the other hand, claims that equity, that is, fairness — who decides fairness is always interesting — but equity is the primary driving force. Using equity instead of equality, it tries to make justice by a person's need. So each group of people is treated differently under the law. I read one thing where it said, well, distributive justice is like this. Everybody gets $10. But if you don't need the $10, somebody decides, we'll give the $10 to somebody else. That's how they distribute it. See, the poor must be treated differently. Why? Because they're poor. That's why. So if the poor steal, they should not be punished. Why? Because they're poor. They shouldn't be punished. Many states enacted policies that those who shoplift under a certain amount would not be punished with a crime. Of course, many have changed that since then, because some states is what, $800, $900 a day you could steal? Pretty good living. But they realized that it didn't work so good for the owners of the shops, did it? There was no justice for those people, were they, at all? But neither of these ways brings justice and peace to a nation as ours today. There's no justice and peace. If you think about justice, it's not a new thing, the cry for justice. The parable in Luke 18, I'm just going to mention it. Luke 18 had to do with the subject of justice. This is the parable of the unjust judge and the widow. The widow continually came before him asking for him to give her justice. The New King James says, get justice for me. But the Old King James says, avenge me. She wanted justice from her adversary, and she let the judge know it. And the judge, though it said he didn't fear either God or man, this woman was wearing him out. So he ended up giving her justice, because he knew he would never have any peace until he did. All of mankind wants justice. All of mankind wants the peace that goes with justice. The trouble is, mankind wants it their way, not necessarily God's way and his judgment or justice. Today, I want to look at this subject of justice and the peace that comes with it. The title of the sermon today is True Justice Brings Peace. True justice brings peace. So let's first start off with the word justice. How would you define justice? I looked up several different dictionaries online trying to find a definition, and I thought Merriam-Webster probably did the best. Merriam-Webster put it this way: the maintenance or administration of what is just, especially by impartial adjustments of conflicting claims or the assignment of merited rewards or punishment. In other words, it's to be fair and impartial dealing with conflicts and being impartial when it comes to either rewards or punishments. Being fair is what most of the online dictionaries said what justice was. Of course, again, you got to define what is fair. Most people see that justice, again, is being treated the same under the law, no matter who you are, whether you're old or young, whether you're somebody important or you're nobody. It doesn't matter whether you're a resident or whether, in case you're an alien here that doesn't, you know, from a different country. Everybody should be the same under the law. That's why you see Lady Justice, what is she always shown? She has a blindfold over her eyes, doesn't she? Because she's not supposed to see who is there with the lawsuit before her. True justice must be blind to those involved. Not a two-tier or multi-tiered system, one set of rules for everyone. Numbers 15, verse 16, God says that's the way his justice system is supposed to work. I'm just going to quote it. Numbers 15, verse 16, God told Israel, quote, "One law and one custom shall be for you and for the stranger who dwells with you. All peoples come under the same law." Doesn't really matter. So let's look and see how God defines justice through the scriptures. There's several words translated justice in the Bible, and many times the word judgment is used instead of justice because judgment and justice are tied together. The word most often used in the Old Testament is Strong's number H4941, Mishpat, M-I-S-H-P-A-T, and it's used 421 times. Several ways this word can be used. It can be used as mainly in a legal point, like a verdict or a judicial sentence or a decree or a divine law, something like that. Now, in the New King James, the King James rules this word, mishpat, 296 times as judgment. So again, sometimes you'll see it judgment or justice, either one. New King James often says justice instead of judgment. The word most often translated justice in the New Testament is Strong's number G3213, Krisis, K-R-I-S-I-S. And this is the word that Christ used when he talked about the weightier matters of law, justice, mercy, and faith. We think, though, sometimes the idea of justice is a more of a modern thing. We see it all the time. But let's go to the book of Job. Mishpat, this is a word for judgment or justice, is used 23 times in the book of Job. We're going to Job. We're going to start in verse chapter 9. We're going to do similar to what the sermonette was talking about. We're going to look at the legacy of Job a little bit. Job had a very good legacy, a few issues in between. What did Job want from God? He wanted justice from God. At least that's what he thought he wanted. And why was that? Why did Job think this way, that he wanted justice? Because Job thought God wasn't being what? He wasn't being fair to him. Exactly right. He wasn't. Think about all what God had allowed Job to go through. We're going to Job chapter 9, starting verse 30. Job lost all his children one day. I mean, it'd be tough. It would be very hard, wouldn't it? He lost his wealth in one day. He lost his health finally. Even his wife told him what? Just curse God and die. Just get over with it. But what did God say about Job? What did God say? He said he was an upright and a righteous man, a blameless man. Remember, his friends, and I'll put that in quotes, came to confront him, comfort him, and say they confronted him. And they claimed what? All because of his sins. He must have committed so many sins in the dark that no one knew. His sins is what caused all the trials to come upon him. Because everybody knows what? Bad things don't happen to good people. Right? Everybody knows that. So it had to be his fault. Job vehemently disagreed because in Job's eyes, he was righteous. He kept the law. Therefore, God was treating him unfairly. God was the one treating him unfairly. Let's read Job 9, verse 32. Talking about God, he says, "Free is not a man as I am, that I may answer him, that we should go to court together. Nor is there a mediator between us that who may lay his hand on both of us." This word court is the same word. It's mishpat. It's justice, you know. He says, because God, I can't take God to court. If I could take God to court, I would have an opportunity. Then we'll get justice. Let's read chapter 13, verse 18. Job was thinking, preparing his case so he could take God to court over this. Job 13, verse 18. He said, "See now, I prepared my case. I know I shall be vindicated." You know, the Christian Standard Bible puts it this way. "So that now then, I prepared my case. I know I'm right." Job was so sure that he was right. He was being mistreated. God was not giving him the justice that he deserved. Read verse 22. Then call and I will answer, or let him speak, or let me speak and you shall respond to me. Again, he's asking God. Let's talk back and forth about this and I'll tell you why you're not being fair to me. He knew he was just, and the case he had prepared would take before court would prove that God is being unfair to him. Read verse chapter 27. Chapter 27 of Job, verse 2. Again, Job continued thinking these things. We can plainly see by these comments what Job was thinking about God at this time. Chapter 27, verse 2. As God lives, who has taken away what? My justice. And the Almighty who has made my soul bitter. The NIV says, who has denied me justice. See, Job knew he was right. He knew. Job desperately wanted his day in court with God. Let's go to chapter 40. He got it. Maybe not quite the way he expected. Job chapter 40. Let's read verses 1 through 8. God gives Job that opportunity to present his case. You know, he's been complaining. He's been griping and saying, God, you've denied me justice. So God says, okay, state your case and let's see what happens. That's what he was ready to do. Remember, he had it ready. Now he had the chance. But I don't think it turned out quite what he expected. Chapter 40, verse 1. Moreover, the Lord answered Job and said, shall the one who contends with the Almighty correct him? He rebukes God, let him answer it. And Job answered the Lord, saying, behold, I am vile. What I shall answer you, I will lay my hand over my mouth. Once I have spoken, I will not answer. Yes, twice I will not proceed any further. Then the Lord answered Job out of the whirlwind and said, now prepare yourself like a man. I will question you, and you will answer me. Would you indeed annul my judgment? Would you condemn me that you may be justified? New Living Translation puts verse 8 this way. Will you discredit my justice, condemn me, just to prove you're right? That's what Job wanted to do. He was saying God wasn't being just to him. That's what he was doing. Because he was so sure he's right, and he didn't deserve what was happening to him. Therefore, he knew God had to be wrong. And the way that God was applying justice and fairness to Job was not right. And, you know, we can look at Job sometimes, and we read these things, and we can think, well, how could he do that? But I would bet that most of us have done that on occasion, whether we think about it or not. You ever thought that you were going through a trial that was just too tough? Too hard? How can this happen? You know, I keep the commandments of God. I do what God says. How can I go through such a trial? You ever thought that before? I have. More than once. Sometimes trials can be pretty hard, can't they? So you can understand Job, the way he felt in that case. And I've expressed my opinion to God when I felt that way as well. And he probably said, yes, Walter, but you need it. Okay. I by no means have gone through what Job, I would never want to go through what Job has gone through. Because Job really suffered. And yet, what did God say about Job? He was blameless. He was upright. Job was a servant of God. Job had to learn that none of us deserve the kind of justice that we think we deserve. If we ask God to give us what we deserve, we're probably in trouble. I don't think I'll ask God that. But finally, Job did understand God's justice. Let's read Job 42. We'll read verses 12 through 17. And when he understood God's justice, he also had the peace that went with it. Job chapter 42, starting in verse 12. Now the Lord blessed the latter days of Job more than the beginning, for he had 14,000 sheep, 6,000 camel, 1,000 yoke of oxen, and 1,000 female donkeys. He also had 7 sons and 3 daughters. I'm not going to name the daughters. Verse 15, and all the land was found no women so beautiful as the daughters of Job, and their father gave them an inheritance among their brothers. After this, Job lived 140 years and saw his children and his grandchildren for 4 generations. So Job died old and full of days. So the same, Job at the end, when he understood it, he ended up having peace, didn't he? He got the peace that went with justice. The justice that he deserved, but he didn't think that he deserved. The correction is sometimes not easy, but the end result of the testing will be peace. Hebrews chapter 12. Hebrews chapter 12. The peace we like, sometimes the corrections we're not really happy with. You know, this section of Hebrews is really kind of hard to take. The author of Hebrews writes about how God, in his love and his mercy, in his kindness, he corrects us for our own good. And of course, it's easy to read and easy to think about until you're right in the middle of a very terrible trial. And sometimes it doesn't seem like it's for our good. Hebrews chapter 12, we will start in verse 5 and read verses 5 through 10. Hebrews chapter 12, starting at verse 5. And you have forgotten the exhortation which speaks to you as sons. My son, do not despise the chastening of the Lord. Do not be discouraged when you're rebuked by him. For whom the Lord loves, he chastens and scourges every son whom he receives. If you endure chastening, God deals with you as with sons. For what son is there whom the father does not chasten? But if you're without chastening, of which all have become partakers, then you are illegitimate and are not sons. Furthermore, we had human fathers who corrected us. We paid them respect. Shall we not more readily be in subjection to the Father of spirits and live? For indeed they, for a few days, chastened us as seems best to them. But he, for our profit, that we may be partakers of his holiness. We're told not to be discouraged when these trials and these tests come upon us, because it's for our good. God does it because he loves us, and he wants us to mature. And it's hard sometimes. We're physical people. Our life is very limited time, and we don't think necessarily, but God is looking down the road. He's saying, yes, what's a few years compared to eternity? What's a few days sometimes of trials? And it might be for many, many years, but what's that got to do with eternity when you compare the two? And God knows what we need, and that's what he does to help us mature in that way. Verse 11. Now, no chastening seems to be joyful for the present, but painful. Nevertheless, after it yields a peaceable fruit of righteousness to those who have been trained by it. To read that verse from the NIV, it says, quote, no discipline seems pleasant at the time, but painful. Later on, however, it produces a harvest of righteousness and peace by those who are trained by it. So what's the end result of judgment or justice, God's justice being applied to you and I? It says we will harvest peace in our lives. In our life today, if we have no justice, we will have no peace. If we have no justice, we will have no peace. If we do not follow laws with other righteousness, then you and I will not enjoy peace. Individually, collectively as a group, as a family, as a nation, as a whole world. If we don't, again, follow the laws, the justice around us, we will not have that justice and that peace. The society around us, again, what do they ask for? They want fairness. Fairness. And that applies to you and I as well, whether you're in school or work. Doesn't always seem that there's always someone who gets away with something. There's always somebody who gets away with something. Somebody does all kinds of blames on somebody else, whatever the case may be. And they don't seem to suffer the consequences, at least not at the time. Let's go to Malachi chapter 2. And then people look around. I've done it before. And you think about all this mistreatment, this unfairness, and the wonder, why doesn't God do something about that? Why is there such a lack of justice in this world? To many, it seems if God just doesn't even care about justice at this time. Malachi chapter 2, read verse 17. Malachi, the book was written to the priest at the time. I was very upset with the priest at the time. because of the attitude that they had. They saw those who were doing evil. They were prospering, or so it seemed. And God seemed like, well, God was pleased with the evil. They were prospering. Malachi 2, verse 17. For you have wearied the Lord with your words, yet you say, in what way have we wearied him? In that you say, everyone who does evil is good in the sight of the Lord, and he delights in them. Or, where is the God of justice? Where is the God of justice? The Christian Standard Bible puts the verse this way. You've wearied the word with your Lord. And yet you ask, how have we wearied him? Then you say, everyone who does evil is good in the Lord's sight, and he's delighted with him. Or else, where is the God of justice? I mean, those who are doing wickedly, they're saying, look at those who's doing evil. Look how they're prospering, how well they're doing. God must be prospering them, obviously, so he must be okay with evil. Otherwise, why hasn't God brought justice to them? That's what they're asking. Why have they not been punished for their evil? Have you ever thought that? I've thought that before. You see people do things, you think, why doesn't God do something sometimes? And you'll see it. You see what happened back in 1995, even in the Church of God. Different things that happen. And you think, well, why? Where is God? And you have to remember a few things. Ecclesiastic 8, verse 11. I'm going to quote it. Ecclesiastic 8, verse 11. Because the sentence against an evil work is not executed speedily, therefore the heart of the sons of men is fully set in them to do evil. God doesn't just immediately strike someone down when they do something. People think they get away with it, don't they? What do most criminals start out? Do they start out doing great big bank jobs first? No. Small things, maybe theft, maybe shoplifting, maybe selling a few drugs here, maybe whatever the case may be, slowly getting away with it. Because God doesn't strike them down immediately, well, you know, maybe God doesn't care. But aren't you and I glad that God doesn't apply justice that way? I don't think I'd see anybody out here. I wouldn't see me up here either. God does not do it that fast. He's more patient. Let's go to Psalm 73. Psalm chapter 73, and we'll start in verse 1. This is a psalm I really like the way this person put it, because he had that same thoughts. You know, he was looking around. He was seeing all this thing going on. Why wasn't God doing anything? How come all these things were happening to me, and yet the wicked were doing so well? And he just bothered him, and he thought about it and thought about it. So let's read Psalm chapter 73. We'll start in verse 1. Truly God is good to Israel, and to such are pure in heart. But as for me, my feet almost stumbled. My steps had nearly slipped. For I was envious of the boastful, and I saw the prosperity of the wicked. Again, he watched the wicked around him, and they prospered. And it bothered him so much. Why? Start in verse 4 through 9. For there are no pains in their death, but their strength is firm. They're not in trouble as other men, nor are they plagued like other men. Therefore pride serves them as a necklace. Violence covers them like a garment. Their eyes bulge with abundance. They have more than a heart could wish. They scoff and speak wickedly concerning oppression. And they speak loftily. They set their mouths against the heaven, and their tongue walks through the earth. And he was looking all around at those who did not obey God, and all he saw was strength, wealth. They were living what we call the good life. They were proud, they were boastful, no obvious problems to their life. Verse 11 and 12. And they say, how does God know? Is there knowledge in the Most High? Behold, these are the ungodly who are always at ease. They increase in riches. New English Translation puts verse 11 this way. How does God know what we do? Is the sovereign one aware of what is going on? Basically, they were saying the same thing that the priests were back in Malachi. Where is the God of justice? Obviously, not there. Obviously, he can't or he doesn't see. what we're doing, we can just continue to do what we want. Verse 13. He said, "Surely I've cleansed my heart in vain. I've washed my hand in innocence. All day long I've been plagued and chastened every morning." Here he was doing what's right, and yet he was the one, it seemed like, who was receiving all the problems. New Living Translation puts verse 14 this way: "I get nothing but trouble all day long. Every morning brings me pain." In many ways, he was feeling like Job, wasn't he? Here I am doing what's right, and all I get is trouble and problems. That's just not fair. That's just not fair. Read verse 16 and 17. "When I thought how to understand this, it was too painful for me. Until I went into the sanctuary of God, then I understood therein." Verse 17 from the New English Translation says, "Then I entered the precincts of God's temple, and I understood the destiny of the wicked." Verse 23 and 24. "Nevertheless, I am continue with you. You hold me by your right hand. You will guide me with your counsel, and afterwards receive me to your glory." I like the way the New Living Translation does verse 24. It says, "You guide me with your counsel, leading me to a glorious destiny." He understood what he's going through was necessary. You and I are the same. We have been promised that glorious and peaceful destiny, to be in the family of God, to serve with Jesus Christ, to be one with God the Father in Jesus Christ and his family. That is what you and I have to look forward to, despite all that's going on. We understand that justice in this world is different. We understand that those who do things in this world, certain classes of people, maybe the rich, the famous, can do things and get away with it. You'll see people, and this is one that gets me so much, you'll see people do things and just laugh like, what you're going to do about it? You know, who cares? What are you going to do about it? That's when you think about, where's that justice sometimes? And they just lie about it. Many have asked that question, where's the justice? Because they can see that. Justice is supposed to be blind. We know justice must come. Where there's justice, there must be judgment. Someone has to decide what the verdict is. And even though there seems to be no justice at this time, or no peace at this time, we know that will be changing. We know that will be changing. We know the time is coming when true justice will be a normal way of life. Let's go to Psalms 96. It's kind of encouraging. We think about even though it's summertime, the fall holy days will be coming, and we think about what's coming ahead and the joy that comes with it. Justice and peace that is coming. Psalms 96, we'll read verses 10 through 13. Psalms 96, verse 10 through 13. "Say to the nations, the Lord reigns. The world is also firmly established. It shall not be moved. He shall judge the people righteously. Let the heavens rejoice. Let the earth be glad. Let the seas roar in all its fullness. Let the field be joyful in all that is in it. Then all the trees of the woods will rejoice before the Lord. For he is coming. For he is coming to judge the earth. And he shall judge the world with righteousness and the people with his truth." It reminds us of that peace that's coming ahead. Jesus Christ is coming. He will come and judge the world with righteousness. Isaiah chapter 9. Isaiah chapter 9. We'll read a couple verses and places in Isaiah. Again, remind us of the feast that's coming, of the rule that's coming soon. Don't know how soon, but it's coming. And we just can't wait. Isaiah chapter 9, verse 6 and 7. We know these scriptures. They show us of the peace that will come. Isaiah chapter 9, verse 6. "For unto us a child is born, unto us a son is given, and the government will be upon his shoulders. His name shall be called Wonderful, Counselor, Mighty God, Everlasting Father, Prince of Peace. And of the increase of his government and peace, there shall be no end. upon the throne of David and over his kingdom to order it, establish it with judgment and justice. From that time forward, even forever, the zeal of the Lord of the hosts will perform this. And think about what we just read there. With justice, he will judge. He will judge with judgment and justice. Again, what would he judge from? What will he use to be judging from? His loss. And because of that, what does it say of the increase of his government and what? Peace. Peace. It will never end. It says there will be no end. Because it takes true justice to bring peace. Isaiah chapter 11. Another set of scriptures you read at the feast every year. Show us the time yet to come. There'll be justice and peace for all of mankind. All of mankind, finally. Isaiah chapter 11. There shall come forth a rod from the stem of Jesse, and a root shall grow out of it, a branch shall grow out of its root. The Spirit of the Lord shall rest upon him, the Spirit of wisdom and understanding, the Spirit of counsel and might, the Spirit of the knowledge and fear of the Lord. His delight is in the fear of the Lord, and he shall not judge by the sight of the eyes, nor decide by the hearing of the ears, but with righteousness he will judge the poor, and decide with equity for the meek of the earth. And he shall strike the earth with the rod of his mouth, and with the breath of his lips he shall slay the wicked. Righteousness shall be the belt of his loins, and faithfulness the belt of his waist. He will judge with righteousness, it says. New Living Translation says he will give justice. Justice will be there. There is that time coming when both justice, that is fairness for no matter who you are, and peace will be for all mankind, the entire earth. That is a time coming that you and I are looking forward to. Every day we wake up and we see these things going on, and it can't help but hurt you as you see them. You know, we have the wars going on. Think how many wars are going on right now. How many people are dying because of it? Innocent people. And you think of all these things going on. Again, where is that peace? Well, there's always talk about peace, isn't there? There's talk about peace in the Middle East again, isn't there? It's not going to happen. Not at this time. But there is that time coming where justice and peace will be on this earth. So how can you and I learn how to apply justice, that is God's justice, in our lives today? How can you and I apply those things? How can we learn? I have 4 or 5 points. They're short. They're not too long. That I want to give to help us to understand justice in a much deeper way and to help them to apply justice in our life and with those we have in contact as well. So point number one, to know justice, we must know the law of God. To know justice, you must know the law of God. Again, that sounds, that's very simple, right? Because remember, justice, what does it involve? Justice involves judgment, doesn't it? Okay. Judgment involves what? Laws, standards. You know, we have laws and standards in our country, which we judge by. How can we be fair in our judgments if we don't know what the standards are? How can you and I be fair in our judgments if we don't know what the standards are? Let's go to Psalm 119. Psalm 119, just back a little bit. And that's something to know, because so many of the dictionaries would say, talk about justice, it's fairness. Well, that's great. Who decides what's fair? Do I decide what's fair? Do you decide what's fair? One culture will say this is fair. Other culture will say that's fair. Who decides what's fair? Well, obviously, God has decided what's fair. And that means you and I need to know what God says about things. Psalm 119, read verses 10 through 16. Psalm 119, verse 10. With my whole heart I have sought you. Oh, let me not wander from your commandments. Your word have I hidden in my heart, that I may not sin against you. Blessed are you, O Lord. Teach me your statutes. With my lips I have declared all the judgments of your mouth. I have rejoiced in the way of your testimony, as much as with all riches. I will meditate on your precepts and contemplate your ways. I will delight myself in your statutes. I will not forget your word. That's the type of attitude you and I have to have when it comes to God's laws. We have to think about them. We have to meditate on them. We have to consider them. You know, if God says this, why does God say that? Or if you have a question, well, what about this situation? What does God say about this? Where do you go? You go to the scripture to read what it says. And you can understand. God gave those laws, those statutes, those judgments for us to understand. And you and I have to learn them. In fact, we even have to teach them now to others, either by example or by actually teaching them. But we certainly have to know them, because in the millennial rule of Christ, what will we be doing? What will we be teaching as law? The Word of God. You think it's going to be any different? No, it's not. It's going to be the same thing. When people are going to say, well, what's justice? We can say, this is what God says is justice. You follow this, what will you have? You will have peace. You will have peace. Psalm 119, verse 165, just going to quote it. We all probably know this. It says, great peace have those who do what? Who love your law. And nothing causes them to stumble. Nothing causes them to stumble, those who love the law of God. If you love the truth. You and I must know the laws of God to understand true justice. Point number two, to apply justice, we must show mercy. To apply justice, we must show mercy. Remember the woman caught in adultery. Under the law, what was supposed to happen to her? Not just her, by the way, of course. It takes more than one to commit adultery. They were supposed to be put to death because of that, right? Christ, on the other hand, showed her mercy, didn't he? And forgave her. Now, he didn't say what she did was fine and go do it again. He said, go and sin no more. But he showed her mercy. Let's go to James chapter 2. He showed her forgiveness. James chapter 2, read verse 13. Because you and I have to show the same mercy that God has showed to you and me. In his forgiveness and his of our sins. I mean, God could, again, destroy any of us, because of our sins. But his mercy, he doesn't. It says, James chapter 2, verse 13, says, for judgment is without mercy to the one who has shown no mercy. Mercy triumphs over judgment. I like New Living Translation of this verse. It says, there'll be no mercy for those who have not shown mercy to others. But if you've been merciful, God will be merciful to you when he judges you. Do you want God to be merciful to you? I do. I definitely want God to be merciful to me. But that means that you and I have to be merciful to others when we make these judgments. Someone does something to you, again, do you show mercy? You have to. You have to learn. That's one of the things you and I have to learn, is to show mercy. Point number three. True justice brings peace. Again, true justice brings peace. Isaiah 59. And we're talking, whether it's individually, what you're doing. Isaiah 59, we'll read verses 8 and 9. Whether it's individually, whether it's a family, whether it's a congregation, whether it's a business, whether it's a state, no matter what, a nation, true justice brings peace to that group. Isaiah 59, we'll read verses 8 through 9. You know, earlier in the chapter, God had told them what separated them. It was their sins separating them from God. These two verses show the result of that sin and separation. It says, the way of peace they've not known. There is no justice in their ways. They made themselves crooked paths. Whoever takes that way shall not know peace. Therefore, justice is far from us, nor does righteousness overtake us. We look for light, but there's darkness. For brightness, but we walk in darkness. Again, Justice, true justice, they don't know. New Living Translation puts verse 8 this way. I like the way they put it. It says, they don't know where to find peace or what it means to be just and good. They've mapped out crooked roads, and no one who follows them will know a moment of peace. That's what mankind has done. They want their own justice, their ways, not the justice of righteousness of God's ways. And in their darkened state, which they think they're doing justice, they find no peace, do they? They find no peace in it because it's not right. You know, back in Isaiah chapter 9, we read earlier, Christ will bring what? Judgment and justice. And the increase of peace will never end. And that's really hard to think about, isn't it? The increase of peace will never end. And we live in a world today, do we see the peace out there? And it's hard to believe it. It's not hard to believe, but it's hard when you look at it and think, wow, someday peace will never end. Never. True peace can only come through God's justice. Point number 4. We're in training now. You and I are in training now. We're in training to bring justice and peace to the entire world. We're not there yet. We're not in charge. We can't do it to the world. But you and I should be praying every day for God's will to be done and God's kingdom to come. And that also means that God's will be done in you and I as well. You know, that means sometimes some tough things happen to us, don't they? And I don't, I don't go out and pray for trials. They seem to come anyway, don't they? But you still ask for God's will to be done in you because you want that change. You want to be there. You want to serve eternity with Jesus Christ. You want to help all of mankind to become a part of the body of Christ. Then you know you have to make those changes. And those changes, a lot of times, we just don't see. But that means you and I are going through tests. We're going to go through trials. We're going through difficulties. We know that. We know that. Let's go to 1 Peter chapter 2. Read verse 9. 1 Peter chapter 2, verse 9. Peter reminds us that these things are going to happen to you and I. To all those who are called at this time. It's just going to happen. And there's reasons again for it. We know the reasons for it. 1 Peter 2, verse 9. 1 Peter 2, verse 9. He says, but you are a chosen generation, a royal priesthood, a holy nation, his own special people, that you may proclaim the praise of him who called you out of darkness into his marvelous light, who once were not a people, but now are the people of God, who obtained mercy, who had not obtained mercy, but now obtain mercy. Read verse 21. Because of that, verse 21. For to this you were called, because Christ also suffered for us, leaving us an example that you should follow his footsteps. He committed no sin, nor was deceit found in his mouth, who when he was reviled did not revile in return. When he suffered, he did not threaten or commit him, but committed himself to him who judges righteously. It's the same thing there. We suffer, sometimes we wander, just like Christ. Christ suffered. Christ wasn't showed justice, was he, in this world? But Jesus Christ showed justice in this world. The first part of Isaiah 53, verse 8, it says, he was taken from prison and from judgment. New English translation says, he was led away after an unjust trial. It was a sham unjust trial. We know it. And you and I will have the same thing at times happen to us. Because Jesus Christ set the example, and we're going to follow his example. Not to the extent that he did, but will you and I be unjustly treated at times? Yes, we most certainly will. Will you and I be unfairly done things to? Yes, we will. So what do? Cry and complain about it? Or do you understand that, yes, we will suffer, just like Jesus Christ did. And there's a reason for it. Because we are to become just like Jesus Christ. And finally, point number five, judging righteously brings justice. Judging righteously brings justice. Now, I know when you talk about judgment, many people will say, "Now, Matthew 7, verse 1. What does it say? Matthew 7, verse 1. Judge not that you be not judged. Therefore," I've heard people say, "you're never allowed to make a judgment. You can't do it. You're told not to judge." However, in John 7, verse 24, Christ tells us, "Do not judge according to appearance, but judge righteous judgment." It's the same word used in both verses. G29:19, krino. Same word used. So which is it? Can you not judge, or do you judge? If you and I never judge anything in this life according to God's law, how are we going to learn to judge in the millennial rule of Christ? If we never judge, well, I can't judge. Sorry. I can't judge. How are we to know? How come we're to know and internalize the laws and the statutes of God, and yet you and I cannot make a judgment? Does that make sense? Let's go to 1 Corinthians 6. You know, the church at Corinth had some issues. We all know that. They had a hard time making a righteous judgment. You know, they refused to make a righteous judgment concerning the man committing the sin in their congregation. What did Paul say about making judgments to them? What did Paul say? Did he say, "Well, that's okay, you don't ever have to make a judgment"? 1 Corinthians chapter 6, verse 2. It says, "Do you not know that saints will judge the world? If the world will be judged by you, are you unworthy to judge the smallest matter? Do you not know that you will judge angels? How much more things pertaining this life?" I'd like to read verse 2 from the New Living Translation. He says, "Don't you realize that someday we believers will judge the world? And since you're going to judge the world, can't you decide even these little things among you?" You and I have been given the laws of God to make judgments, to make justice that leads to peace, justice and peace. It's not to condemn. You and I are not to be condemning other people. We don't have the right. We don't have the authority. It's not our job. But do you and I have to make judgments? Yes. Did the Corinthians end up have to make a judgment on that man? And he had to be put out for a while, so he could come back. That's what they did. Didn't the peace of God return to that congregation in Corinth once the man who committed the sin stopped and repented and the judgment was made and brought peace to him and the entire congregation? So again, there are times you and I have to make judgments, and we have to judge. We don't condemn, because, again, we make judgments. Don't we make judgments on ourselves? Do we examine ourselves? Do we make those judgments? Yes, we do. And you and I have to learn in this life how to make righteous judgments. We have to make righteous judgments. So as I finish up today, finish up the message, we can see that justice is a very important subject to God. It's very important. Without judgment, true judgment, there can be no peace. There can be no peace individually. There can no be peace collectively, anywhere. Whether it's a church congregation, whether it's a city, whether it's a nation. Our God is a God of justice. But he's not a harsh God. He's not a harsh God. He's one who's quick. He's not one who's quick to pronounce quick judgments and death. None of us would be here if that was the case, would they? He is a very merciful God, rich in mercy, desiring greatly to forgive, not desiring what? That any should perish. That's what he's like. But he is a God of justice. And there is a way that has to be done. He wants all mankind to be at peace. But all mankind will eventually have to submit to his justice to have peace. I'd like to finish today by reading Zechariah chapter 8, verse 16. I'm going to read it from the Revised Standard Version. Zechariah chapter 8, verse 16. Here, God was telling Zechariah what he wanted from his people, which we are today. God wants this for all people. Zechariah chapter 8, verse 16 from the Revised Standard Version. These are the things that you shall do. Speak the truth to one another. Render in your gates judgment, or it could be justice, that are true and make for peace. Judgments that are true that make for peace. For without true justice, godly justice, there can be no peace.